Japan, Air Force crews are preparing to help with the search and rescue efforts in response to the havoc caused by the massive earthquake and tsunami that struck the country. Air Force Tech Sergeant Mike Tureishi joined these crews and brings us this story.
We're going to be right near it.
Captain Gabe Brown and his search and rescue team are up early preparing for their mission. It will take them nearly 12 hours for this crew to meet up with the force ship that left Kadena yesterday. After that,
we are going to Yokota Air Base. Once we get there, there is a C2 element there that's working with the Japanese, and they're going to determine how we're going to integrate with them to do these recoveries, these search efforts.
The crew is prepared to stay as long as necessary to assist their host country partners.
We're prepared to search, recover anybody who's still stranded in, you know, if there's any water that's pooled up anywhere, that sort of thing, or stranded offshore as well.
As daylight starts to peak, this search and rescue team will be joining others in helping the Japanese wherever they're needed. Tech Sergeant Mike Tadaishi, Kadena Air Base, Okinawa.
U.S. sailors based in Japan have also answered the call in response to the devastation as Helicopter Anti-Submarine Squadron 14 conducts humanitarian missions in those areas worst hit. Naval Petty Officer Brian Record files this report.
Sailors stationed at Naval Air Facility Atsugi have come together to accomplish a variety of tasks to provide relief support in the aftermath of the earthquake and subsequent tsunami that hit Japan. Personnel assigned to Helicopter Anti-Submarine Squadron 14 are taking this mission to heart. Lieutenant Junior Grade Aaron Castro, a pilot in the squadron, says he feels happy to help.
It's great. It's great to actually be able to accomplish the mission that we're training for and to help the people in need.
For Hospital Corpsman Second Class Zachary Silvius, who's part of the flight crew, the disaster hits close to home.
It's an honor. Being married to the Japanese for, you know, and part of that family for over 5 years, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, a second nation for me. And I feel real proud.
Since the disaster, the squadron has spent numerous hours in the air, assisting with search and rescue operations and other disaster relief efforts. Sylvia says he feels privileged to support such an operation.
And I know that my wife and her family are real proud of us, as well as everyone back home. You know, we're safe, and we're going to be safe doing the mission. And it's such an honor to be able to do this for, you know, the nation of Japan.
Petty Officer Brian Record, Naval Air Facility at Tsugi, Japan.
Patrols are a common way for U.S. and coalition forces to search for and combat enemy forces. Air Force Tech Sergeant Adrian Brammer shows us how these patrols are also important for Afghan forces to interact with the people.
A group of American, British, and Afghan troops formed up in two lines to leave Kandahar Airfield in a foot patrol. Walking through plowed fields and dormant vineyards, they made their way to the tiny villages nearby.
Basically, today we're going to be patrolling out, showing ourselves in the area, interacting with the locals, letting the Afghan Air Force security forces get their names out there and start interacting with the locals so that eventually they can take over our job.
While a foot patrol is business as usual for the coalition advisors, it's an important duty for the Afghan airmen of the Kandahar Air Wing to learn.
My hope is that, you know, that we can pass all of our expertise along to them and that they can utilize that to be successful in operating in their own country and so they can be autonomous from coalition forces.
This foot patrol was an equally important opportunity for the villagers to learn about the consequences of allowing insurgents to use their farmland.
We visited these people to tell them that we are here to help them and assist them. We told them that next time we'll come here, we'll educate them to make sure that nobody bothers them. Also, we want to ask them who brings the rockets here. Are there Talibans living in this area? Are there Taliban who are coming to this area or not?
Daytime patrols allow the Afghan public to see their national security forces in action, which builds confidence in their ability to protect the country. Tech Sergeant Adrian Brammer, Kandahar, Afghanistan.
You would be right to guess that General David Petraeus is a busy man as the commander of ISAF and U.S. forces Afghanistan. NATO Channel correspondent Mel Preen was able to catch up with the general to give us a rare look at a typical day for him.
A trip out to see the soldiers typically starts with a security briefing. The general's told about local key players, from the police chief to Taliban commanders. He's reassured by the way things are going. Lagman province sits northeast of Kabul, near the Pakistan border. Mohammed Iqbal Azizi has been the governor here for almost a year. It's now his turn to give an update on security.
The security approach, the pragmatism there, is a catalyst in speeding up the reinvasion.
Yes, exactly.
And in the Lagman, the highly successful operation, and at the same time, a lot of insurgents are coming and reintegrating with us.
The general tells the governor how he wants to push the Taliban back further, but they have to work together to make that self-sustaining so the Taliban won't come back. He reiterates that it's not all about fighting.
I am a non-kinetic as well as kinetic guy. I can do either. You know, I actually was a professor of economics, believe it or not, at one time. And so I very much am attracted to economic development, to free market economies, to private investment, to all of these engines that really propel an economy forward, and education. But I've also been called, in an article, a professor of war. And we can fight too, and you have to do that to enable the professor of war to become the professor of economics. Well, we think of this as a once, not just in a lifetime. This is once in Afghanistan's lifetime opportunity, and we must help you make the most of it, because it's possible that it may never come this way again.
Across the street from the governor's compound is a girls' school. More than 2,000 pupils are taught.
Well, thank you very much. Education is the most important activity in anyone's life.
There wasn't time to chew over too many things before the general had to move on to his next engagement. Another military camp, though this one a lot more remote, right up in the mountains. This can be home for up to a year for some of the soldiers living here.
When you're on a deployment like this, it is very easy to end up in the Groundhog Day syndrome quite early on, frankly. And for what it's worth, that even can happen to the commander. And what you have to do is constantly remind yourself, sort of come up out to 30,000 feet level, look down, and realize the magnitude of the importance of this mission. We are very grateful to you and our country, regardless of their views, frankly, is solidly behind you.
And with that, the general's off again. He's confident about the year ahead, but he's relying on the hard work of others, as the professor of war can't win this battle alone. Mel Preen in Afghanistan for the NATO Channel.
Along the Libyan border, airmen have been running missions daily in support of the ongoing crisis, transporting nearly 150 displaced people every day. Air Force Tech Sergeant Trevor Pedro files this report.
On March 4th, airmen from Ramstein's 37th Airlift Squadron and 435th Contingency Response Group were the first to get the call. They set up an ops center.
Lion 478, Wolfpack Ops.
Streamlined the pickup and drop-off process.
All the way.
And they're continuing to rise above the challenge.
Things have been going great. The team is very motivated. We've been able to help a lot of Egyptians get back to their home country, almost 600. And the crews are very excited, and the rest of the team's excited about what we've been able to do to make an impact in their lives.
More than 30 airmen have supported the African humanitarian missions, and leadership doesn't see things slowing down in the near future.
We understand that the crisis on the border of Tunisia and Libya with the evacuees coming out is fluid, so there's going to be some peaks and valleys, and we actually hope that things end up slowing down, so that means that things are getting better in that area of the world.
This expeditionary team transported nearly 150 people and more than 7,000 pounds of cargo over the weekend. Tech Sergeant Trevor Pedro, Ceuta Bay, Crete.
In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, Marines are establishing security, which in turn is allowing the Afghan government to bring development projects to the region. Marine Gunnery Sergeant Bryce Piper shows us how something as simple as a paved highway can make a huge difference.
Helmand Province, Afghanistan. One of the few places insurgents continue their campaign of murder and intimidation. But U.S. Marines with Battalion Landing Team 3-8 from 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit and attached to Regimental Combat Team 8 have begun to contest with insurgents for control of the area. It's about security. And one of the benefits of that security? Construction of Highway 611.
This is much more than a road. It's a symbol of creation. It's a symbol of the goods and services that can now flow in and out of Helmand Province. It's a symbol of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan's will to provide security here.
As construction continues, Marines and their International Security Assistance Force partners close with insurgents who threaten security and progress. With Battalion Landing Team 3-8. I'm Gunnery Sergeant Bryce Piper.
The mission of training Afghans to assume responsibility for the security of Afghanistan continues in Kandahar, as Air Force Staff Sergeant Joseph Vigil shows us how training for that responsibility is a joint effort.
U.S. Air Force Armament Systems Specialists share their knowledge and experience with the Kandahar Air Wing Ammunitions and Armament personnel during a training exercise on A-10 aircraft. Munitions Advisor Air Force Sergeant Rachel Yuki explains the benefits of this training.
They get to have a reference point from their process to our process. They need to see how the Americans do things, how the rest of the world is accomplishing tasks, so they can evaluate their process and see what they can do to make their own process better.
These ammo specialists may not speak the same language as each other, but even when the translators are not around, communication doesn't stop the mission.
And they try very hard to communicate with us, so there's a lot of point and talk, there's a lot of watch me do it, now you try, and they'll show us new and different things as well.
Afghan Air Wing Sergeant Major Mohammed Hassan Akbarzai explains how learning from each other not only strengthens the bonds between the two crews, but also strengthens their mission.
Our American components work with us shoulder by shoulder. They help us a lot from each section, from logistics to maintenance. They help us a lot by their way.
With successful training like this, Afghan forces become better equipped with handling the security in Afghanistan. Air Force Staff Sergeant Joseph Vigil, Kandahar Airfield, Afghanistan.
Equal rights in Afghanistan has made great strides in recent years, which is evident by the elected governor in the city of Bamiyan. NATO Channel correspondent Ruth Owen introduces us to a woman who has been key in developing the formerly poverty-stricken province.
The hustle and bustle of Bamiyan City's bazaar. The largely peaceful province has suffered in the past from lack of development compared to Afghanistan's other provinces. But one woman is working hard to change that. Dr. Habiba Sarabi is the country's only female governor, and since her appointment in 2005, has pushed for better infrastructure, better education, and naturally better rights for women.
It is difficult, you know, that such a country or such a community like Afghanistan that always men are talking and making decision. It's very difficult for a woman to talk or to be in the very high decision-making body. We have to prove ourselves.
She's been key in improving Bamiyan's infrastructure, crucial to local commerce, and her ambitions for the economy, which includes making the province a tourist destination.
Bamiyan was ignored for a long time. For the international community and the government of Afghanistan, security to tackle with security issue was much more important than to deal with the peace province.
Security has occasionally been an issue, however, largely in the northwest, which shares a border with Baghlan province. Dr. Sarabi intends to tackle the problems head-on by setting up negotiation with insurgent fighters and local leaders in a high peace commission. But as she belongs to the dominant Hazara ethnic group, who the Taliban brutally persecuted, she also recognizes it will be hard for many who suffered to accept these people back into their community.
One of the group came from out of Bamiyan. One was a minority was from Bamiyan that they wanted to save themselves. So the Bamiyan people doesn't have any problem with this minority which is from Bamiyan, but the Taliban who came from outdoor and committed a lot of crime in Bamyan. Of course, the Bamyani people will never forgive them.
As for her own security, Dr. Sarabi knows that through embracing her pioneering role, she's also taking on risk.
As the first female governor, it's a challenge and for security. I can be a good target for the extremism. So they will be happy if they can target me.
Dr. Sarabi has ambitious plans for Bamyan. She wants to connect the province by sealed road to all of the surrounding provinces and introduce mainline power to the whole of the province within a few years. What keeps her going, though, is simple personal aspiration.
I wanted to prove ourselves, to prove the women's rights and the women's status in Afghanistan. And my main idea was that if I can help the people, and I'm happy that at least I could help somehow the poor of the poorest in Afghanistan, which is Bamyan people.
This is Ruth Owen in Bamyan for the NATO channel. A commercial artist turned U.S. soldier has found a way to use his talents to commemorate comrades. Army Sergeant Sam Dillon walks us through the process of how this Army Reserve soldier creates posters for a project that honors those service members who have fallen.
I wanted some patriotic posters for my home. Went online. The selection was limited. I decided to maybe to make some patriotic series of posters. And it morphed into putting a fallen soldier on one of the vintage pieces. And the artwork just came to life. Bukowski's poster, his mother, went to one of the Gold Star meetings. And they usually bring a lot of the artwork. It's been created then by different artists or photographs or things that represent their family members. From his poster came Specialist Kuhn's poster. So Specialist Kuhn's mother saw Bukowski's poster. Then Winnie's mother, his mother saw the artwork and she's requested a poster for him. So it's word of mouth. It's going from family to family. When the family calls up, they select photographs. They send over a bio telling me about their hero. They'll send over photographs and then we'll choose from the photographs the ones that best fit them. Ultimately, we decided that this photograph here was the best photo to use. We trued it up, brought out all the detail into the photograph. Take the photograph and begin to illustrate. It's actually done by drawing one piece at a time. Start off with the eye whites. We'll put in his neck. You can see how much work goes into it. And there's Dale Castleberry. It's almost like with the poster behind me, there's so much energy in it that it's a matter of where it's daring you, to ignore. And that is something that I try to do with all the artwork, and that's what their families love. Especially when people begin to email and purchase pieces, and they want people to remember their stories. And the artwork actually creates a great platform for them to be remembered that way. It looks like part of history. And it is a part of history.